Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's time now for the Record program number 380, titled Between Iraq and a Hard Place, Part 3. This is being recorded on September 30th of the year 2002. And as I'm speaking, the brouhaha about Iraq, and perhaps that's the wrong word, certainly it is a brouhaha. It threatens to become a whole lot more than that, and there will be nothing to ha-ha about. But the heat on Iraq, or the heat about Iraq, is being turned up both at home and abroad. And we're going to take a look at some aspects of the situation vis-a-vis Saddam Hussein, and aspects of the whole question that have not received the attention, in my opinion, that they are due. Before I get into the substance of the discussion, let me remind you that if the approach that I use on this broadcast is overly pedantic, or if you only hear part of the program or want to peruse the information at greater length, you have a number of options at your disposal. First of all, there is a tape duplication service called Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, which not only has all of the For the Record programs, but the lectures and the archive shows that I've done available. So they're available on tape or CD. You can reach Spitfire at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Be aware that on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, in addition to the fact that it is equipped with real audio, and you can listen to the most recent pair of half-hour segments on that website, within a week or so, sometimes as much as 2 weeks, usually within a week or so, there will be an article-length, detailed, annotated description of For the Record program number 380 featuring text excerpts so that you can read about it, and you can read about the discussion, pursue the sources on your own. In addition, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y, and older For the Record programs are available for download only on real audio at a longer URL, which is linked to both the For the Record section of the Spitfire website and to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery streaming website for WFMU. More about that later on in the program. Now, with regard to Iraq, one of the things that I'm afraid of is that the United States may be being drawn into a war. I think that the Iraq situation is much more complex than it has been made out to be, but I'm worried that what I call the Underground Reich, and that is quite literally a Third Reich gone underground, may very well be drawing the United States into a war in Iraq, which in turn might very well cause a world shift in economic power, either by giving elements close to the Underground Reich direct control over the vast oil resources of the Middle East, or by perhaps shifting the economic power of those nations to banks, as the brilliant Kevin Coogan suggested in a white paper that we looked at over the last couple of weeks. The suggestion was made by Kevin Coogan, author of Dreamer of the Day, that perhaps some of the Nazi Islamist, or as I call them, Islamo-fascist links, which have cropped up in the background of September 11th in the person or in the positions of al-Taqwa, or through the personages or institutions of al-Taqwa or Nada management, people like Youssef Nada, Ahmed Huber, and by extension elements of the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood, such as the late Saeed Ramadan and others, loom large in connection with September 11th. And beyond that, their connections extend to elements of what I have termed the fascist international or post-war fascist international. One of the things to think about in connection with Iraq is the oil wealth, obviously, the concept that I've introduced before of the Earth Island. That is a Nazi geopolitical concept in which the vast landmass stretching from the gates of Gibraltar in Europe all the way across Europe, Eurasia, the former Soviet Union, most of what we call the Middle East, China, India, and Pakistan, a vast block of land embracing most of the world's population, most of its landmass, and most of its oil reserves, controlling the Earth Island may be something that the control over the Earth Island may be something that stems from the events that we are looking at in connection with September 11th, and also perhaps in connection with what is taking place vis-a-vis Iraq. I would suggest that with regard to September 11th and Iraq, the situation is much more complex than has been made out to be. And I would not oversimplify the question. I am also very much afraid that the United States may be being baited into a war in the Middle East, which ultimately will be against its best interests, aside from the inherent tragedy of loss of life, etc. I would note that as conservative a pair of personages as Henry Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft have warned that an attack on Iraq might very well turn the war against terror, the war against al-Qaeda, against the U.S. by recruiting vast numbers of Muslims to the al-Qaeda cause. It also will draw valuable resources away from the war on terror. I am also very much concerned that there would be a retaliation against the United States and or Israel. Certainly it would appear that there will be a retaliation against Israel, and I wouldn't be that surprised, as Senator Byrd has pointed out, if some of the wee beasties that Saddam Hussein has at his disposal, apparently, including some that may have come from the U.S., if some of those wee beasties, meaning biological organisms, get used against the United States. Recall the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk that I've talked about many times in the past. It is like its companion volume, The Turner Diaries. I believe that this book put out by National Vanguard Books is in fact a blueprint, sort of the Turner Diaries of the Underground Reich, as I have put it. In that book, the Underground Reich takes over the United States in the mid-21st century. The descendants of the SS put together an organization that buys into the American opinion-forming media, infiltrates the American intelligence community and its military, and following a biological warfare attack, a bioterror attack on the United States using genetically engineered microorganisms, an attack that wipes out the president, vice president, and much of the U.S. population, martial law is declared and the Underground Reich takes over. One of the eventualities to consider here is the possibility of a retaliation against the United States by biological warfare weapons. I have also raised the question in For the Record program number 374 and in For the Record program number 379 about whether perhaps there has already been a bioterror incident or two, raising the question, and I want to stress that these are questions about whether the foot-and-mouth outbreak in the United Kingdom might have been a biological warfare attack. It is among the organisms about foot and mouth disease, is among the diseases being stockpiled by the Iraqi General Directorate of Veterinary Affairs, as its biological warfare program is called. And also there have been a number of reports that the West Nile virus, or a variant thereof, had also been developed by Saddam Hussein. So those are two of the considerations that I think need to be evaluated. There have been some media reports that an Iraqi gambit was outlined for George W. Bush, and that the potential of what was discussed was so alarmed him that this constitutes the nature of the motivation, I should say, for the saber rattling in the direction of Iraq. I would note in that regard, many listeners have asked me what I thought about the German cabinet minister characterizing George W. Bush's tactics as being like those of Adolf Hitler. I've been asked about that a lot. I don't think it's all that significant in and of itself. It is very ironic, noting that in the first place, many key elements of the Third Reich survived intact within Germany itself, and many of the industrialist financiers, judges, generals, the intelligence service, and many of the key political operatives as well have performed very nicely in post-war Germany, either in the national security, economic, or political establishments of the Federal Republic. I would also note that George W. Bush's family itself has a very strong Nazi heritage going back to the Thyssen Union Banking Corporation connection, and that George Bush's father, George I, as I call him, was chairman of the Republican National Committee when the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization was formally established as a branch of the Republican Party, which it was in the early 1970s. That is literally a Nazi wing of the Republican Party with its roots firmly anchored in the Third Reich itself, elements like the Romanian Iron Guard, the Croatian Ustashi, the Bulgarian National Front, Baltic and Ukrainian Waffen SS units, among others, found a very productive post-war position within the Republican Party itself. And there are indications that the Bormann organization, the economic component of a Third Reich on underground, has used the Bush family businesses, meaning Union Banking Corporation, Bank for Handel and Scheepvaart in the Netherlands, and the August Thyssen Bank in Berlin as the triangular pivot points of a very effective post-war Nazi money go-round, so to speak. I would also note that Saddam Hussein, and this German cabinet minister's remarks were made in connection with George Bush's saber-rattling vis-a-vis Iraq. Saddam Hussein has a Nazi heritage with his uncle, Khairullah al-Tufah, having been a key supporter of Ali Rashid Gilani's pro-Nazi uprising in Iraq in 1941. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, having been a key figure in connection with that. Also, Fritz Grobbe, sort of a German Lawrence of Arabia, who was the Nazi ambassador to Baghdad at that time and involved, apparently, in that intrigue. Another of the things that is ironic about the German cabinet minister's comments is that the reason why, or sort of the under the foundation of the remarks, was the fact that Gerhard Schroeder and his coalition government in Germany had been playing the anti-war and anti-American card very effectively to distract the German people's attention from the very serious economic problems that Germany is experiencing. And it was just such a charge that was the foundation for the cabinet minister's remarks about George Bush, that basically the saber-rattling vis-a-vis Iraq was being used to distract from serious domestic problems as well. Some GOP leaders have been quite candid that the Iraqi war card, so to speak, has been a very effective tool by keeping economic news off of the front page. And it is ironic because it was as a distraction from domestic German economic problems that the cabinet minister made her remarks in the first place, and that was the same basic tactic that Gerhard Schroeder is using. I think that the cabinet minister's remarks about Bush were accurate. Many GOP leaders have been pretty frank in some articles in the mainstream media about just exactly that. I would also echo the sentiment that has been expressed by many, and that is that with Iraq having the second largest proven petroleum reserves in that part of the world behind Saudi Arabia, and with a petroleum industry executive as president and another one as vice president, well, I don't think one needs to belabor that situation overly. Obviously, the energy industry and the petroleum industry would have their own motivations for attempting a military adventure in Iraq as well, and I think that point is well taken. Nonetheless, I suspect that what we are looking at vis-a-vis Iraq is a subset of the entire question of the maneuvering vis-a-vis the Nazi concept of the Earth Island, the tremendous economic power that is contained within the petroleum wealth of the Middle East, and the maneuvering that has been taking place for the better part of a century with regard to attempting to woo the allegiance of Muslim and in particular Arab peoples to a German or and/or underground Reich perspective and away from a British, French, or American affiliation in terms of economic and political relationships. First British and French and later American have been the dominant political and economic relationships in that part of the world since the end of World War I and the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. Now, I'm going to discuss a couple of some aspects of the Iraqi situation which have not received as much attention as they might have, namely the connections between Saddam Hussein and so-called neo-Nazi or neo-fascist elements around the world. And in particular, we're going to take a look at the links between Helmut Kohl's government and industrialists and financiers in his administration that were active on behalf of Saddam Hussein. Because as we looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 87, many of the key German core corporations, including the Bush-linked Thyssen firm, were heavily involved in the arming of Saddam Hussein and the equipping of him with his weapons of mass destruction capability, and indeed the Thyssen firm, among others, has been sued by American Gulf War veterans in connection with Gulf War syndrome and the equipping of Iraq with weapons of mass destruction. And I would submit to members of the listening audience that in examining what is going on vis-a-vis Iraq, even though that is a relatively secular Arab regime, there do appear to be some very strong connections between secular Arab Arabo-fascist, as I would call them, regimes, and some of the Islamic fundamentalist regimes, not only within the Arab world, but also obviously in the Shiite Iranian fundamentalist government that has been present in Iran for the last two plus decades. And I would note links between some of the secular Arabo-fascists, Sunni Islamo-fascists, Shiite Islamo-fascists, and beyond that, connections to not only Third Reich veterans, but so-called neo-Nazi and neo-fascist elements around the world. One of the things that I think we should think about is whether, as I believe, like September 11th, hostilities in Iraq could in effect represent an extension of the war between the United States and the underground Reich and its Islamo-fascist allies. And one of the key elements in that struggle is a very powerful fifth column within the United States that is certainly present within its economic and political structures, in the presence not only of the Bush family linked to the Thiessen organization and the Bormann group through that, but also through the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, its connections to these Third Reich veterans that I've alluded to, Romanian Iron Guard, Bulgarian National Front, Ustashi, etc., and to some of the Wahhabi-slash-Islamo-fascist or Islamist-fascist elements that Talat Atman, a director of Harkin Energy, was on whose behalf he was interceding, as we've looked at in, among other programs, for the record, 376, and numbers 356 and 357. Now, let's begin the discussion about Iraq and the maneuvering, or as I believe, what I believe to be the maneuvering by the underground Reich for the allegiances of the people, the allegiance, the political allegiance and the wealth of the people of the Earth Island, in particular, Arabs in particular, with their tremendous oil wealth. We're going to turn briefly to the book Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yaqui and the Post-War Fascist International. This was authored by Kevin Coogan, published in softcover by Autono Media, Incorporated, copyright 1999 in softcover. And by the way, this book and a book that we're going to rely on for much of the rest of the program, Martin A. Lee's The Beast Reawakens, are both still in print, so people who would like to read about the Nazi slash Underground Reich slash Middle Eastern connection, there are two very good books available right now that deal with this connection, Dreamer of the Day and The Beast Reawakens. Now, one of the Nazi progenitors of Ahmed Huber, a key director of Al-Taqwa, and Al-Taqwa, of course, an organization that the Treasury Department has alleged was involved with September 11th. That was Ahmed Huber, about whom we've spoken in many programs. Ahmed Huber, in turn, as we have seen in many of our broadcasts, was a protege of Johann von Leers, later Omar Amin von Leers, in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry in World War II. And later, one of the emigre elements that went to Egypt under Nasser and set up shop as the head of the Institute for the Study of Zionism. While in Egypt, von Leers eventually ran into and became a mentor to Ahmed Huber. He also worked with, among others, the aforementioned Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and also with people like François Genoux. Taking a look at the Middle East and the maneuvering around it, one of the things that von Leers noted in a passage I'm going to quote from a letter to Odessa operative and alleged Sicherheitsdienst operative H. Keith Thompson, that is the fact that the American support for Israel has been a factor that has damaged its relationship with much of the Arab world. About the American-Israeli relationship, Johann von Leer's mentor to Al-Taqwa and alleged Al-Qaeda operative Ahmed Huber, we read this in a letter to H. Keith Thompson by the aforementioned Johann von Leers, quote, "The monkey love of the USA government for the Jews isolates the Americans both in Germany and in the Near East." And it is this type of maneuvering that in many ways may be exacerbated by military action in the Middle East. And I wonder to what extent the United States is being baited into an attack, the response to which has already been determined, whether a biological warfare attack or chemical warfare attack on Israel and or the United States. My feeling is, and this is a hunch, and should be taken as such, my feeling is that the Underground Reich is luring us into a conflict in that part of the world where its Islamo-fascist or Arabo-fascist allies will be dealing most of the real blows and the deadly blows, and we in turn will be wiping out much of the Arab population in reprisal. So assessing what it is that I'm about to say, consider the possibility that we are being drawn into a trap in that part of the world, and that either economic and or military means may be used by the Underground Reich's Islamo-fascist and Arabo-fascist allies to destroy the United States and Israel. And in particular, bear in mind the Serpent's Walk scenario, in which a biological warfare attack on the United States precipitates the declaration of martial law and the takeover of the U.S. by the Underground Reich. As I mentioned, Johann von Leers, the man who was quoted in that passage that we just read, Johann von Leers was part of a Nazi emigre group that set up shop in Egypt under Gamal Abdel Nasser and found a relatively hospitable environment. As we've looked at, and among other programs, RFA show number 3 and RFA show number 22, one of the groups that found succor, so to speak, in Nasser's Egypt, there was a group of Nazi scientists, many of whom were graduates of the Peenemünde Nordhausen rocket program. They had worked for Nasser, and some of them later went to work as part of the German group that helped to arm Saddam Hussein not only with some of his missile technology, but some of his chemical, biological warfare, and nuclear technology, as we've looked at in, among other programs, for the record, 287 and 295. As we're going to look at in the program this evening or today, some of the German BND, the German Intelligence Service, also helped to train some of the Iraqi Intelligence Service as well. We're going to turn now to the book The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, published in hardcover by Little Brown and Company, copyright 1997. The ISBN number for the hardcover edition is 0-316-51959-6. Now, one of the people who bridges the gap from Peenemünde Nordhausen to Nasser's Egypt, to Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction program, was a fellow named Walter Busse, B-U-S-S-E. Turning to Martin A. Lee's The Beast Reawakens, by the early 1960s, 500 Egyptians were working on aircraft and guided missile projects in Egypt. Included among the Germans were a number of scientists who would later render assistance to Libyan and Iraqi chemical warfare projects. Walter Busse, for example, designed ballistic missiles and military jet engines for Nasser in the late 1950s and 1960s. He subsequently turned up as an advisor to Saddam Hussein's military R&D program prior to the 1991 Gulf War. So Walter Busse, part of the German scientist contingent that, along with Huber mentor Johann von Leers, was able to set up shop very effectively in Nasser's Egypt, and thereby helped to, among other things, carry out an extension of their war not only against Israel and against world Jewry, as the Nazis called the Jews, but also against, ultimately, the United States. And as we've looked at in, among other programs, our numerous conversations with Kevin Coogan, the author of Dreamer of the Day and the white paper summary of the von Dohany book, Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg, Al-Qaeda in Europe, the aforementioned Kevin Coogan has been my guest in numerous broadcasts, and we've talked about the Nazi geopolitical and Middle Eastern connections of the Third Reich in numerous broadcasts. Those are available from Spitfire, and they are online, courtesy of sister station WFMU. And I would note, in connection with the Gulf War, that we're going to see a confluence between the Nazi position, the so-called neo-Nazi support for Saddam Hussein against the United States and Israel, and the position of the German government and key elements of German industry and finance as well. So one should not dismiss some of the connections that I'm going to be going into as simply, quote, neo-unquote Nazis. Note the confluence of policy between the so-called neo-Nazis and the CDU-CSU government of Helmut Kohl. Another thing to keep in mind, and that is the evidentiary tributaries connecting a number of different terrorist incidents in the 1990s, the first World Trade Center attack, the 1994 AMIA bombing in Argentina, the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, and September 11th, there are evidentiary tributaries that run between each of those events and which overlap not only Islamist or Islamic fundamentalist terrorism, but which also overlap extreme right-wing or so-called neo-Nazi terrorism as well. And in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, bear in mind that unimpeached testimony by Carol Howe, an ATF informant who passed a polygraph examination, maintained that Timothy McVeigh's mentor in the Oklahoma City bombing was Andreas Strassmeier, a German Army veteran and so-called neo-Nazi, who was the son of Gunter Strassmeier, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff and the architect of German reunification. And time permitting, I will run down some of the programs that link or establish evidentiary tributaries between the AMIA bombing, the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the September 11th attacks as well. I've made reference to other broadcasts that are available. Not only the For the Record programs, but the lecture tapes and archive shows that I've done are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Within a week or so of the airing of this program, there will be a long article-length summary, detailed annotated summary, of For the Record 380 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, with links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 380, Between Iraq and a Hard Place, part three, being recorded on September 30th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.